In nearly all cases with modern health systems, you're waiting months for appointments only to spend a mere 10 minutes with a doctor who quickly hands out a generic diagnosis that is likely rooted in a total misunderstanding of health and causes, and then you're offered a one-size-fits-all medication or invasive treatments with unpleasant side effects. If this sounds all too familiar, consider a different approach with the New Biology Clinic, founded by Dr. Tom Cowan, a respected natural health doctor, author, and speaker. Dr. Cowan's holistic perspective on health and wellness and a deep understanding of the true nature of health and disease sets this clinic apart. With the New Biology Clinic, it's not about quick fixes and suppressing symptoms. The practitioners take time to understand your unique story, recognizing that health is unique to the individual and that illnesses have a variety of causes, physically and metaphysically. Members of the New Biology Clinic enjoy a flat monthly fee that includes a range of valuable services like health consults as needed, practitioner-led live streams on diverse health topics, access to a members-only resource library, and multiple live group sessions every month. These sessions cover fitness, breathing integration, biofield tuning, guided meditation, EFT tapping, and much more. Unlike traditional healthcare systems that thrive on frequent visits, prescriptions, treatments, and suppressing symptoms, the New Biology Clinic's motivation is to make you healthy and keep you that way. Visit newbiologyclinic.com to learn more and use code THEWAYFORWARD for $50 off your account activation. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com to receive $150 off your account activation. Your journey to genuine healing begins here. Jodi Meshick is an author, activist, coach, and companion. After her own family was rocked with facing a vaccine injury and a myriad of illnesses and side effects from the childhood schedule, she took matters into her own hands. She found her voice, gained strength, and took power back for her family. She now helps empower others to choose their own path rather than being told what to do. She partners with parents to demand more, be it from their doctor, the school district, or local government. Autism turnaround expert and naturopathic practitioner, Jodi leads her membership group, the Warrior Center, to advocate for children, mothers, and families. You can find her exploring nature, practicing yoga, CrossFit, teaching a class on alternative medicine, baking with her kids, or traveling to speaking engagements. She is a freedom fighter and a change maker, and has an army of parents right behind her. You can connect with Jodi at the link in the show notes. Find her website at the link in the show notes as well. Jodi, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Alec.
Yeah. It's because of you that my first ever event that I did came to fruition, because you're the one who came up with that idea. You're like, we should do an event. I was like, you know what? That sounds like a good idea. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Good memories.
Yeah. Very good memories. Keep being kicked out, but then holding them accountable after the fact. Yep. That's the cool part. So, yeah, your story is one of the most compelling stories that I've come across with harm from the childhood vaccine schedule, but also subsequent healing, which is the, I think, most important piece of this. But I just wanted to start by asking you just to recount the details of your story as much as you're willing to, because I know there's some of it that needs to remain sensitive a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, and I appreciate that. As with anything in life, we kind of evolve, right? Our kids evolve. And I look back at that time period and I think, wow, how could I have been so duped? Like, really, that's what I want to start with, is you enter into parenthood, into motherhood, and you just are so trusting of every system. You just think, they're there to save us. They're there to help us. There's no way that there would be something that would harm my child. It's unfathomable, almost, right? And then you go through an experience like we went through that trust, that blind trust, and you see the other side of it. Mm-hmm. And I think, I look back at that time period, and I'll try to recount as much as I can, while also, again, keeping it a little bit private as well. But, you know, imagine, and this is really any mother that goes through this. My story actually is not very unique. And I think that's kind of the sad part is, although it's a very compelling story of harm from the childhood schedule that took us by surprise, because you don't ever expect that. And then you have to deal with the aftermath of it. And you're left to pick up the pieces, right? That pediatrician's not there at 2 a.m. when your child is screaming and their brain is on fire and their body is on fire. And you're like, what's going on, right? To the other side of that, which is, I am not going to sit idly by and allow this to happen. I have to do something. And so then you go through that healing process, right? Like there's a beautiful part in that story. And there's also the pieces of it that still to this day, I can sit back and cry my eyes out, you know? And I will say, in most times, I may cry today. Just because that's an experience that you hold in your heart as a mother forever. So I guess basically, if I look back, you know, you go to those well visits and you think there's no way that what they're doing in terms of the childhood schedule is able to harm my child, because everything that they tell you is it's safe and effective. Like, how many times I heard that word, safe and effective, but at the end of the day, they're not. And I'm sure we'll get into that today. And I think also what I didn't realize is that in the very beginning, there's some of those signs that you don't notice right away. Like, you see them, the things like gut dysfunction, diarrhea, skin eczema type things, sleep disturbances. And every time you bring that up, it's normal. It's normal. Don't worry about it. It's normal, right? Normal to get a fever after a round of vaccines. Oh, and by the way, go ahead and actually, how about you prep your child and give them Tylenol first? Give them Tylenol first. And then that way, when we vaccinate, they won't have as much pain, right? So you're told all of this stuff and you just blindly believe it. So that's really what my story initially, it's like in the very beginning, going to those well visits and not really putting together initially the eczema, the ear infections that were crazy. I mean, the amount of antibiotics that I was told to give my child because of recurring ear infections, at least eight within his first year of life.
Yeah, insane.
And that's pretty normal, right? Like, that's not uncommon, unfortunately. And we have to remember, common does not equal normal. Right. So then as you progress, you just kind of start to question. So I did start to question. I did start to do a little bit of research. It was a little bit easier to find things back then, even though there was still some censoring going on, but you could at least find some information. So I would come in to some of the visits and go, you know, I'm not so sure I'm comfortable with that. Are you sure that that's safe? I don't know if doing that many at one time is okay. And what you're met with is shame, guilt, almost yelling at you.
You're met with intense shame,
intense shame. And there was the one fateful visit, I'll say, which I look back and I just think, why didn't I run out of that office? Like, why did I not? Probably why I'm so passionate today to help save one baby at a time, to let parents know, just walk out. In fact, don't even go.
Yeah, you don't have
like,
to go.
Don't even go. Like, don't put yourself in that position. So here I was, quite vulnerable, pregnant again, and there's just the trust. You know, you ask the questions, and then there's the, well, I would do this for my child. Well, you're a negligent mother if you don't do this. I was literally told I was a negligent mother if I didn't fall in line. And so I fell in line because I wasn't there with my husband. Probably should have taken him there with me. And I do advise parents nowadays, number one, you don't even have to go. But number two, if you're going to go, make sure you have somebody who's an advocate there with you, because when you're in that vulnerable position, they will take advantage of that, and they know that. And it sounds so stupid to say that, but it's the truth. It's the reality, is they are so bought into what they believe, that these vaccines are safe, that they don't know anything else. So you're fighting against a machine that doesn't even want to hear your hesitancy, that doesn't want to hear your concerns, that doesn't want to listen to your heart as a mother. And so I allowed this catch-up visit, which a lot of parents get caught into, because if you, you know,
because you're already somewhat hesitant.
I was already hesitant. Yeah, I was like already spacing feeling, them out, yeah. My gut, my intuition, but I just wasn't there yet of finding my voice to say no more.
Yep.
No more. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so that was what I'll call the fateful visit, in which case a lot of harm was done and I was left to pick up the pieces. So there I am, pregnant, another child who was harmed. And
oh, you were pregnant in this, you were pregnant with your,
yes, okay, pregnant with my second.
Okay.
And driving home just in tears. That instant flood of regret just comes over you to where it's paralyzing. And that is the mama intuition.
Right.
That is, I believe, what God has completely put inside all of us. But especially as mothers, we have this very special connection to our children that dads, unfortunately, don't have.
I don't disagree.
And we have to listen to that. But when you're put in that position of being shamed and just being told you're stupid as a mother, it's hard
by
to find
quote
that.
Expert too.
By a quote expert in a white coat. It's hard to find that in that moment. So then came the next part of our chapter, which was, what do I do now?
Yeah.
What do I do? I'm left to pick up the pieces. Like, they literally harmed my child's system, and now I'm left to pick up the pieces. And I think what a lot of parents don't realize too is there's so many of those subtle nuances that happen that you have to look for, right? Like the things that I missed, which was the recurring ear infections, the eczema.
Is this post that
this
well
is
visit?
Pre?
Oh, pre.
Because even though I was, even though I was spacing them out because I was a little hesitant, there still is a side effect.
Right.
They're still like, they're not safe.
And antibiotics.
Yeah. And then
too,
you
right?
add antibiotics right. and right. I didn't know about toxic cleaners. Right. I didn't know about environmental stuff. Like
so many things.
There's so many things.
Right.
There's so
right.
many things. So that's kind of the short version, but, yeah. There's obviously the end of the story, which is super happy
right.
that it took years and years to just rebuild their systems
right.
from that damage. But it is possible.
Right.
And that's what I want parents to know, too, is it is possible to not only prevent something by having the awareness and the knowledge, which I would prefer the prevention piece, right? But then there's also the, we have millions of children who are given these labels and these diagnoses. And you can turn that around. You don't have to stay in that space.
So in the aftermath of that well visit with someone who's close to you, you found yourself seeing very clear signs of issues occurring, like very, very clear just after that, correct?
It was within that evening, or actually quite like quickly after the visit. Of fever.
Especially because this was a catch-up.
Yeah. So this was more than what normally would be given.
Right.
However, what I want parents to understand is even though some may get caught in a catch-up visit, what's actually given to children today is that catch-up amount,
yeah.
right? Like it is not uncommon to go in and have 9 to 12 vaccines at one visit. That's not uncommon. That used to be what the catch-up was. And now that's pretty the norm.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. And what a lot of parents, like situation that they find themselves in is sort of two things after the fact, right? First is having to reconcile the cognitive dissonance that they're facing when they bring their child to an expert, and then just after that they witness their child's health drastically change, their behavior drastically change. And that's a case that is pretty, you know, common in this space. I mean, we're definitely in a bubble, but that bubble is getting bigger and bigger, and you hear these stories all the time. And so it's that cognitive dissonance piece, which I would imagine, I've heard you say this before, is accompanied with a lot of shame and guilt and regret. And like, what did I just do? I went against my own gut instinct. And then on the second side of that, it's that, okay, I go right back into that system to try to figure out what's going on with my child. And that system then says, your child has this label, they'll have it for the rest of their life. There's nothing you can do about it. Just accept it. And you've found that there, with, you know, countless people that you've helped, that that's not true.
Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, I found myself in those positions of initially you're thinking, okay, this can't be real. Like, this can't be real. This is a dream. I'm going to wake up from this nightmare, but it's very, very real. And there's a sense of urgency that comes over you. Or for me, at least, I had a sense of urgency that came over me. Some of it was probably a lot fueled with anger. And, you know, anger, imagine. Nothing wrong with anger, right, if we fuel it in the right direction. And so it was this anger that I was taken advantage of, that I was duped. And I had a limited amount of time to try to fix the problem versus let the problem continue. And part of that process was, yeah, going to some experts in those white coats and just seeing, well, what do they have to say? Right? Because you're kind of caught in the middle at that point. So I will say it's like I had one foot in the natural world all of a sudden of, oh, I cannot believe this just happened. Like, right. I see it. My eyes are open. My eyes are forever open. And I can now never unsee,
right,
the corruption. I can never unsee what the system has done to my family. But then you still have one foot in, I don't know everything. So maybe I need to ask some experts, collect some data, see what they have to say. And what I found every step of the way was, you know, whether you go to a pediatrician, like a functional pediatrician or a pediatrician or a neurologist or a pediatric neurologist or an OT, a PT, whatever you call it, right? There's so many people that claim they know how to help you, but they're actually not helping you.
Right.
And what you're looking for is you are looking for answers. I think initially you're looking for, and I'm sorry. I think initially I was looking for, I'm so sorry this happened.
Was that a subconscious thing?
It's a subconscious thing.
Yeah.
But I found you're never going to get that. Mm. You're never going to get an I'm sorry. And so then I was looking for, well, what's the way out? How do I fix the problem? How do I reverse this damage? How do I heal the body? How do I now go into a space of, okay, like the body's on fire, very unhealthy, very sick. There's a clear cause for that because it doesn't just happen overnight. Yes, there can be a bioaccumulation, but there's something eventually that's going to be sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak. And I'm looking for help. You know, at the end of the day, as mothers, we just want our kids to be healthy. We just want our kids to thrive. And then when something happens, you're almost left at the mercy of these experts that actually really don't care about healing. They only care about management of symptoms and giving a label and then pushing you off to another part of the system. Mm-hmm. So many parents get caught where I was, where you are actually innocently looking for help, but you're not going to find it. And I think that's the harsh reality that you face. And that's when the shame and the guilt creep in. So that's all of a sudden where you go, you're supposed to be helping me fix this problem. You're a doctor. Mm-hmm. But now all you're saying is it's genetic. There's nothing you could do. And you know, the problem with saying it's genetic, immediately that mother goes, what's wrong with my genes? I'm the problem.
Right.
I'm faulty.
Blaming themselves.
There's something wrong with me. So that's a whole other wave of shame that comes over you that you feel like, I did this to my child. There's something wrong with me. That's another huge lie that is like all across society with all these labels and all these diseases is that, oh, it's just genetic. There's nothing you could do about it. It's just genetic. It's just the way it is. And then they push you off and they go, well, you can do therapy. Probably going to need to be in a special school. Like, they paint a picture to parents of doom and gloom.
Right.
And then that's what parents believe. And so it's at that point that you have a crossroad, right? So I remember going to many of these visits, going, okay, like, what do I do? Help me get my child back into normal, like, health, right? Not finding any answers except it's just genetic. It's just genetic. Here's a referral to this or to that. And it was just management of things. It was brushing me off. And so you drive home. I'm driving home from these visits, just like white knuckling my steering wheel, full of anger and rage at the system, and realizing driving home, the only person who can save my family is me. Mm. And that's it. I'm the one.
Yeah.
I'm the one left to pick up the pieces from something the system did to harm.
And how many mothers have you come across who have a story that is very clear to you that is the result of vaccine injury, but they just refuse to even consider that their children's or their child's current condition is the cause of that, because they would then have to reconcile with, I had a hand in my child being harmed in some way.
Yeah, a lot. I will say I'm kind of like many of us, we're in a little bit of an echo chamber, right? Like, obviously I'm helping families and I'm helping mothers heal their children from things like autism, ADHD, all of these things, because they see it. Mm-hmm. They've opened their eyes and they are actually looking to heal their children. Mm-hmm. But the massive amount of children out there that will never have the opportunity to heal, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And it, I think that is the dark side of this topic. It's just, you have to face that. And it's really hard to face that.
Yeah.
It's really hard to take a step back and not put your own emotion into it, which took a little while for me, right? Especially with understanding, hey, I'm the one that believed this was going to be safe and effective. I'm the one that said, okay, go ahead and do it. Even though I feel like I did it under duress, right? I did it kind of, you know, in this position of being my back against the wall, so to speak, in this pediatrician's office. But that facing of that and going, you know what? I didn't know what I didn't know, but I'm going to fix it now. Like, that's a different mentality than, well, if I actually face the fact that I said yes to this and I didn't stop it, and now my child has this diagnosis or this problem, or God forbid, these babies that die of SIDS.
Right.
You realize they're trying to erase SIDS now and not even calling it SIDS anymore.
What are they trying to say now?
Suffocation.
Just suffocation.
Suffocation. They're not even calling it SIDS anymore. That I can't imagine. Now, I've never been in that position. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine being in that position. But imagine the feeling that that mother is going through. It's an immense amount of shame and guilt.
Yeah.
And shame and guilt are very different, right? So guilt is, oops, I messed up, right? Shame is, I'm a bad person. Right. I'm a bad mom. And that completely changes the game when you have that shame. And so you have to really, you have to take a step back and you have to go, you know what? It is what it is. Mm-hmm. And this sounds really cold and heartless, but it's a really big part of the process, not only to heal the mother, but to heal the child. Mm-hmm. Is if the mother does not heal that part, the child will never heal. I'll tell you that right now. Mm-hmm. So it actually begins with us.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big statement. I think to some degree, as someone who has over the course of my life struggled with shame, like, shame can become very, very toxic. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, shame is a good, like, little nudge from your higher self or from God that, hey, you messed up. You should probably not do that again. It's a good indicator to get you back on the right track if you allow it to be. So,
yeah, I mean, anything can be good or bad. Mm-hmm. You know, and what we see, what I see a lot in what I deal with in talking to parents and just even observing, you know, it's interesting to be an observer when you look at how people respond and how mothers respond to vaccine information. And granted, social media is a little skewed. Like, you can't always take it at face value because you have all the bots out there and you have all the fake accounts and you have all that. But if you really peel back that layer and you see what people are conditioned to believe, it's very eye-opening. Mm. very eye-opening, the blind trust. And I personally think that that comes from the years and years and years that they've sown fear into parents that the disease is going to kill them more than the vaccine.
Right.
So when you are that afraid of your child dying from measles, which, by the way, is not deadly. I mean, literally no one has died of measles in the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. or chickenpox, or even meningitis. That's another one they love to scare people with. Polio is probably one of the biggest to scare people. When you are that afraid of your child dying from something, you'll blindly believe that the thing that's supposed to stop that is, I mean, that thing is actually safe when that is actually the problem. That's the poison.
100%.
Yeah.
There's this chart that compares the language of like how the UK describes chickenpox and the chickenpox vaccines, where it's not on the childhood schedule, versus how the US describes chickenpox and chickenpox vaccine, where it is on the childhood schedule. And in the US, it paints like a picture that definitely incites fear in those who are reading it. Whereas in the UK, it's like, chickenpox is like a mild illness that many children come across that is accompanied by some itching and some like pustules that come on your skin. But other than that, it's really not that big of a deal, and they'll get over it pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, just look at, like, you can't even find the Brady Bunch episode anymore with measles. Mm-hmm. I mean, they censor so much on purpose just to craft this narrative that you should be more afraid of the flu, of all of these common things that we get, which, you know, we of course have our own views of why disease even exists. But yeah, it's a fear that they have used for their own gain. And that's what I see most is when I talk to parents and I say, why are you vaccinating? And I ask the very simple question of, why do you do it? Well, I'm so afraid. I don't want them to die of this disease. That's always the answer. The answer isn't because I'm told to. Mm-hmm. The answer is, I mean, that's part of it, right? Because you're going to believe that if you're in fear. The answer isn't, well, it's just part of what you do, right? It's they're literally afraid of their child dying of measles.
At that point, they're literally just regurgitating what other people have told them. And that's the sad part. And we all just turn to these experts in white coats. But it's just crazy to me that the most well-funded, robust, supposedly well-researched, advanced medical system in the world exists in this country. And in the same token, 129 million people in this country have at least one chronic illness, which is over one out of three, I think, or just that one out of three. So 33%, right? And if I remember correctly, like 54% of kids today struggle with at least one chronic illness. Mm-hmm. Autism rates in 1990, I know this for sure. In 1990, they were roughly 1 in 2,500, and now they're 1 in 36. And climbing. And you have at the same time, and here's the thing. I don't think that it's all only vaccines. And I think that's the slippery slope for those of us who are opposed to vaccines, like can go down where we blame all the chronic illnesses on just vaccines, when there are so many other things in our environment that are causing issues, non-native electromagnetic fields, the whole birthing paradigm itself, like the antibiotics that are used, Pitocin, epidurals, like C-sec, there's so many things, right?
So many.
But with that being said, it is interesting, and I think this is like commonly known in this space by now, so hopefully people send this episode out to others who need to hear it. But you look at the vaccine schedule, and I want to say that by 18 years old, kids received typically 24 or less vaccines before 1986. And then nowadays, kids by 18 years old receive, I think you were telling me, because it was 74 in 2016. And now I think it's anywhere from 84 to 96 shots by the time they're 18.
But climbing towards 100.
Right. And that's insane. And the part that's the craziest to me is obviously looking at that schedule across 18 years is already like, this is insane. But if you look just in the first 12 months just in the first 12 months, kids receive between 24 and 26 shots if they're following the CDC childhood schedule in the U.S. So they receive 3 doses of Hep B, 3 doses of rotavirus, 3 doses of DTaP, 4 doses of HIB, 4 doses of PCV, and flu shot, 1 to 2 doses, measles, mumps, and rubella, which is one of the most damning ones, MMR, 1 dose, and then chickenpox, 1 dose.
Yep.
Totaling 24 to 26 shots by 12 months of age. And you think about that, that's like insane how much toxicity is being pumped into a brand new baby, all for the totally unproven idea that this is going to prevent some sort of so-called infectious illness. It's insane.
Well, and most people don't even know what's in a vaccine.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, let's just start there, right? So it used to be mercury was a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole topic in itself, because that obviously caused a lot of damage. You know, like any tiniest dose of mercury is going to be toxic to a human being, not let alone a small infant baby.
And this is thimerosal we're talking about.
And that's thimerosal, which, by the way, is still in certain flu vaccines. People don't realize that, because then there was this whole thing of, you know, get mercury out, get the thimerosal out, which they did because they were under fire. But it's still hidden and snuck into some other vaccines. But really the culprit being aluminum, because regardless of, okay, so we take out thimerosal, which still caused damage. You know, if you think back to the 80s, before the 1986 Act, which gave complete immunity to pharmaceutical companies, there was still damage that was happening. There was still things, you just didn't see it as much because there wasn't as much poison pumped into children as rapidly as it is done today.
Mm-hmm.
Then get the thimerosal out. Now replace it with aluminum, because you have to have some type of adjuvant in there, or they say that you do. I mean, I'm still waiting for, okay, if your vaccine's so great and you think it's going to prevent measles, why can't you just inject measles?
Right.
I'm still waiting for that one. 100%. Right? But now it's aluminum. And again, you have to look at the aluminum, the formaldehyde, the polysorbate 80, the aborted fetal cells. You know, I mean, I always kind of take a step back and I go, okay, and not to make this about religion, we don't need to, but you obviously have a large group of people that would say, I'm pro-life.
Right.
And then you go, but did you know that there's aborted fetal cells in vaccines that you're giving your children? And they look at you like, huh? Right?
Right.
Like, we have to know and understand what's in these things.
Right.
So it's the what's in there. It's the repetition of it. It's the amount. It's how often it's being given and injected. It's the pathways in the body. You know, one of my favorite things that a pediatrician loves to say is, oh, well, you eat aluminum all the time.
Right.
Aluminum's in your pans, in your food, in your water. That is a whole different pathway in the body of how that's metabolized.
Now, that's what the World Health Organization cites too, is, oh, we know that aluminum hydroxide and aluminum phosphate, which are the two forms of aluminum as adjuvants in vaccines, we know that they're safe because we've done these studies where if they're ingested, it just is detoxed right out of the body, which is insane.
It is. I mean, now would I say go cook on pans where you're going to just be eating metals all day? No, probably not good. Mm. However, the body is really adept at actually clearing out in a different pathway.
Through digestion
mm-hmm. versus injecting. So I love it when, you know, I used to challenge pediatricians all the time. I mean, we don't go to well visits, haven't been for over 14 years. Mm-hmm. I'll never, ever go back to a well visit again. And nobody should, in my opinion, go to well visits. But when I used to ask the pediatrician, so tell me what the difference is between injecting aluminum and ingesting it. And they actually can't answer the question intelligently, because all they're regurgitating is what they were taught in medical school by a book written by Big Pharma.
Right.
That's all they're regurgitating. And then parents don't realize how much money they're making. I mean, you take a pediatrician, they don't actually make a ton of money. Right. There's this joke that, like, if you go to medical school and you become a pediatrician, it's because you weren't qualified to do anything else. So just became a pediatrician.
Didn't know that.
I mean, listen, we need good doctors. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we don't, but the
in
problem,
emergency medicine,
in emergency medicine,
in emergency medicine, maybe
everything else
it.
Can go. By the
maybe
way,
some surgeries,
right?
some
maybe.
Surgeries, yeah.
But yeah, like if you take what they normally make, so let's say they would $100,000, $150,000, average range for a family practice pediatrician. When they take the bonuses of what they get for every vaccine that they give in their office, they make well over $1 million a year.
No way.
Yes.
Oh my God.
It is in upwards of $250 per patient if you fully vaccinate them.
Oh my goodness. That's insane.
So tell me that your pediatrician is actually honest.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me that your pediatrician is actually neutral on this topic, because they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually not. And the ones that have left, the ones that have been awoken,
like Dr. Larry like Pilevsky,
that or Thomas, or,
yeah,
you know,
Dr. Paul Thomas, that'd be another one. Bob Sears. Is he a pediatrician?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there's really three ones that are kind of the most famous ones, right? You get shunned, you get your license taken away, you're forced to retire. What does that tell you?
Mm.
What does that tell you? Right? Like, it's just looking at it with common sense. But if you don't know this information, you don't know the information.
Right. Right. My friend, Mike Cardamone, I showed you that video. I'll link it in the show notes. He sort of pokes fun at this idea that ingesting aluminum is the same as in being injected with aluminum by saying, that's why for lunch today, I liquefied a ham and cheese sandwich and just shot it into the side of my neck, because ingesting something is exact same as injecting something. And I think like framing it in that way to show how absolutely absurd it is makes you then look at, oh my God, it really is absurd to think that eating aluminum hydroxide and aluminum phosphate is the same as injecting it. It's a completely different thing. And I haven't done the background research on this as of late, but I remember a few years ago, I was looking into Professor Christopher Exley out of the UK, who was studying the brains of people who had Alzheimer's. And he was finding, and I could be incorrect on this, but higher concentrations and quantities of aluminum in the brains of people who had Alzheimer's versus those
it's
who
didn't.
It's
a real study.
Yeah.
They opened up a bunch of cadavers and they saw aluminum at very high levels. Now, again, think about the older population. They're highly duped into getting the flu vaccine all the time. Once, twice a year, get your flu vaccine. Then you have just years and years of exposure of, like, if you've been using antiperspirant deodorant with aluminum in it, you know, your pores are very open right there. But yeah, I mean, 100%, it affects the brain neurologically. And, you know, one thing that I'll paint a picture for parents. And this is kind of gets you right here, right? Because when you actually really think about what a child goes through, what a baby goes through when they're on that table in the pediatrician's office, it really puts it into perspective. So when your child is in that office, there's something that happens to their body because it's an unknown environment, okay? They might be with mom, but it's still an unknown environment, which means the body, no matter what, whether they have words or not. So this could be a 6-month-old little baby, because their bodies are very intuitive. They know what feels safe. They know what feels comfortable. That's why typically you bring the baby to your chest to nurse them. They calm down immediately. There's this special connection between mother and child.
Right.
Calms the nervous system. It actually helps with brain development. So nursing actually helps with brain development because it's a connection issue, right? So when our bodies are in fight and flight, what happens, right? We get this rush of cortisol. You know, think about the last time you're driving, somebody stops in front of you and you think you almost hit them, and you almost feel this like rush of blood go throughout your body. That's exactly what happens to a baby and a toddler every time they're on that table in a pediatrician's office.
Yeah.
It's just inherent. It's how God made our bodies to protect them from dying in a situation of fight and flight. Otherwise, your heart would stop. Cortisol actually protects your heart. Okay. So now picture this baby on this table, white office, usually cold.
Sterile, and this, cold.
This stranger coming at them with this needle. Okay. Now, again, they may not be able to recognize that it's a needle, but what they can recognize is this doesn't feel safe.
Right.
In that moment where that child is screaming, because let me tell you, it's pretty rare for a child not to scream and cry when they're being injected with something. It's a pretty normal response totally. Because it's pain.
Right.
Their blood-brain barrier opens. So you inject them with aluminum. Okay, every vaccine has some type of adjuvant. So whether it's thimerosal or aluminum, most of them are aluminum now. It's supposed to pool at that injection site. But what happens when the body is under fight and flight is everything, just imagine kind of like everything in the body just opens, right? So things can flood everywhere. And I really think this is the beginning of the problem, especially when you think about neurological issues that they like to call autism or ADHD or these other things, is that baby is screaming and crying. And in that moment, that blood-brain barrier opens ever so slightly. And where does that aluminum go? Where do those preservatives go? They go into the brain where they don't belong.
Mm.
And then it's incredibly hard to get them out. Now, you can get them out because obviously I've seen healing happen with my own eyes. I've seen autism be reversed in many, 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 many kids. But you have to think about that, is that it's not just a shot.
Mm.
It's not just a vaccine. There's a whole biological process happening with that baby. And it's under that fight and flight response that the most opportunity for damage happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, like picturing that is unbelievable. It's insane. One of the rebuttals that I've heard with respect to autism and neurological disorders, but specifically autism, is that the reason autism rates have gone from in the 80s, 1 in 10,000, and then in 1990, 4 years after the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which made vaccine manufacturers free from any liability. 1990, though, it was 1 in 2,500, and then now it's 1 in 36, is because they've become, quote, better at diagnosing.
I love that one.
And then the other one is, and I do think there's some subtle nefarious intentions at play here with this one, is that they've expanded the definition of autism, and they have. But let's touch on the first one, the idea that they've become better at diagnosing autism.
I mean, it's how you lie.
Yeah.
The simplest way to put that is look at what happens in the media every day.
Right.
Like, again, without being political, they can tell you anything about a candidate. And if they tell you it enough times over and over and over, you're going to believe it.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
So if they tell parents enough times, well, we're just better at diagnosing and that's why the rates are higher. If they tell society that, if they put that out in news articles, which they do all the time, on purpose, very manufactured, people are going to start to believe it.
Yeah.
There's been problems happening for years and years and years. The easiest way to cover up a lie is to keep lying.
Right.
Right. But eventually that lie is going to crumble. Now, I've always had high hopes that over the years, because I remember when, you know, we first started out in our own journey of learning more about natural medicine and, you know, how the lies that existed in Western medicine, even as simple as things for like ear infections, antibiotics, like what a lie that is, right? It's viral, it's not bacterial. But, you know, you start to go down that path and you realize, wow, like they can't just admit that they made a mistake because the entire lie would crumble. And then they would have a civil war on their hands, essentially, right? Of parents who would finally see the truth. So they can't do that. Mm. They have to keep covering up the lie and keep covering up the lie and keep covering up the lie. So now you have even more diagnoses. Like this is a new one, ADHD. Have you heard of ADHD?
No.
Brand new one. Let's just add another one. Autism and ADHD together.
ADHD, that's insane.
It's like the pronoun club. Let's just keep adding more letters to the end of something, right? So it's just at a certain point, we as people, as parents, have to be able to take a step back and take our own power back. Because again, we could go all day long and tell people till we're blue in the face, this is a lie. it's not better diagnostics. It's always been a problem. It's getting worse because there's more being added to the schedule all the time. There's more toxins being added to the environment all the time. But parents won't necessarily believe that. Mm. You, and we talked about this last night. It's like, you have to have something happen in your life that's so bad that you finally take a step back and you open your eyes to see things for what they are.
I mean, that's happened with some friends of ours too, like a couple friends of ours actually, where they didn't hear or believe what we had to say. And now after their own children have been harmed, they now listen to what we have to say. And that's, it's incredibly sad that it takes something like that for you to see. But sometimes that's what it's required, is an individual experience that is that traumatic for you to change the whole trajectory of your life and heal.
And I actually don't think autism is what they want you. We'll talk about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
This whole, like, we're just better at diagnosing, it's not autism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's the body is in a fight or flight mode, and it's in massive trauma and inflammation. And the brain is on fire, but let's just call it autism to make it
totally
feel better.
Well, this is my point too, is that, like, I would be shocked. Let me put it like this. I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone who is in the boomer generation that can name multiple people in their classroom that had to be in special ed to the point that they're like banging their head against the walls, wearing a helmet, or someone who's completely nonverbal, multiple people who are completely nonverbal, because you see that very frequently now. And you did not see that. You have very little stories of that in the 70s, 60s, even the 80s, and sometime the early 90s.
Again, what they'll say is it's just better diagnostics.
Yeah.
Really, are we that stupid of a culture to believe that? That's kind of what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Are we really that stupid?
Well, when you regurgitate something enough, like, that's what people believe.
Yes, exactly.
But the other one with expanding the definition of autism now to include people with mild social quirks, like, mm-hmm. is, I think, another nefarious way to cover up this subset of people who are acutely poisoned. Like, it's very clear that there's a difference between someone who is 24 years old, still wears diapers, lives with his parents, is nonverbal, versus someone who has mild social quirks, but they fall under the same category. And I think that they've expanded the definition so that they can then claim, well, that's why autism rates have gone up so much. And also, this is very clearly not vaccine injury. These people just have mild social quirks, but they still fall under the category of autism.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, just look at social media. Right. Yeah. Look at every adult out there. Oh, I have ADHD all of a sudden. I just realized after 30 years, all my problems, I've had this diagnosis. I mean, granted, do we have a society of a lot of really sick adults? 100%.
Yeah.
Do we have a society of a lot of adults that have quirks? 100%. But there's a root cause to that. There's a reason why. There's a reason why we have a nation that people can't think critically and they can't have common sense. And I mean, again, there's a whole bucket. You can look at social media. You could look at cell phones. You could look at food quality. You could look at lack of nutrients in their bodies, which means a lack of nutrients in their brain.
Another one I found out recently is folic acid.
Folic acid, right? Like, how many mothers were told to take folic acid when they're pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a synthetic vitamin. Mm-hmm. It's a synthetic form, meaning it's poison.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So do we have a epidemic of sick adults mentally and physically? Yes. But it's not because they have autism.
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing for people who are getting into the sort of health freedom, natural health space that want to make better choices for their kids struggle with is the fear of what authority will do if they don't vaccinate their kids. And I'll say that my wife and I struggled with that quite a bit initially. That, along with well, okay, if we're not going to do this, then we don't want anyone being anywhere near our kids because we're worried that they're going to get them sick, which is a total psyop itself too. And we, you know, found out very quickly that especially when they were younger, our kids were never sick, much healthier than their counterparts who were vaccinated. And you find that pretty commonly. But if they did get sick, they would recover quickly. And then even the way that I look at sickness now is completely different. So I'll set that aside. But we were very, very afraid of what authority figures would say. We felt like, oh, this is what you have to do. And you have to find ways to get around this. And now, looking from the outside with a completely different lens, it's like, it is really the easiest thing ever. Again, there is places like California, which are becoming increasingly tyrannical, but even then there's ways around that.
I know plenty of parents sending their kids to school in California and they don't give a rat's ass.
Right. See, that's like, what I'm saying.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Exactly.
That's what I tell parents. What do you want to have happen?
Right.
Then do it and make it happen.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure you get that a lot though. Yeah. The parents that come to you and are afraid of authority and afraid of what, like, you know, like these stories of CPS coming to yes. take your kids and things like this.
And I would say that's like the second. So like first barrier or obstacle I'll say is the fear that their child's going to die of a normal disease that will actually help their body, mm-hmm. right? Like how many parents know that measles is going to actually be cancer preventative? Mm-hmm. Like if you naturally acquire measles, you are creating natural cancer killing cells in your body. Mm. Look at the cancer rates today. Why are they still growing exponentially? Large part of that is because we're not gaining natural immunity and building these cells like we're supposed to. So that's fear. Number one is the fear. Number two is I'm afraid of getting in trouble. Okay, now most this happens with like rule followers, which I think a lot of society. Hello, 2020. Who put on the mask? Mm-hmm. Rule followers. Even though they knew it was wrong. Even though they knew it was wrong, they put on a mask because they were afraid of getting yelled at by a little old lady in the grocery store, or they would follow the arrows. Why were there arrows in the middle of the aisles, but then like there were no arrows anywhere else, right? Like I would go against the arrows on purpose just to see who would yell at me. But you have a lot of rule followers. Mm-hmm. They have good intentions. A lot of times they know it's wrong. But again, if you are so afraid of being yelled at or getting in trouble, you're going to fall in line. And that's what they expect.
Right.
They want a society of rule followers. So I think you have a large segment of that. What I will tell you, or any parent that's listening, is nobody's going to come after you.
Right.
Period. The end. So if you are afraid of somebody coming and knocking on your door, that's not going to happen in this country.
And there's ways around that.
And there's ways around that. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, we need to be careful that that doesn't happen in this country because you can use California and New York as a litmus test for that. But even in those places, I have plenty of parents getting around the system because they want to. So nobody's going to come after you. You don't have to go to a well check. It's not the law. You don't have to vaccinate. It's not the law. And in many instances, the sad part is the way out is very hidden. Mm-hmm. And they do that on purpose. So even in my state, Colorado, I'll use it as an example. We actually left California because I saw what was happening there. And I just taxes everything, right? Like we left. But Colorado, sadly, is kind of going the way of California. But most parents don't realize that you have a way out. And so I talk to a lot of parents in Colorado who will go, well, what do I do? I don't want to vaccinate. But there's like, there's no billboard that's like, hey, you can vaccinate. If you don't, go ahead and fill out this form. They're not going to advertise that for you. You have to go dig and find it and know that it's there. So you have a lot of parents that are blindly doing something because they don't actually know that there's a way out, that you have rights, that you can fill out a form, but they make you jump through hoops. So example, let's say you go to the nurse's office, because a lot of parents will go to the nurse's office because they've got to fill out paperwork. They keep hounding them. You'll keep getting emails. You've got to update your vaccine records. You've got to turn this in for your child to come to school. That's not actually true either, by the way. But they will fall for that because they know what they're doing. They know that if they put the parents on the defense, then they will fall in line. So let's say you go to the nurse's office and you say, hey, you know, we actually don't vaccinate. Can I have my personal exemption form? Oh, we don't carry those here. They make it incredibly difficult. And that's why a lot of parents just end up giving up because it's too hard.
Right. And that's why you also, on the other hand, see a lot of parents now saying, F public schools.
Well, that too. Yes, of course. So like, for me, it's like, okay, I gotta watch these stupid video modules in order to get my little exemption form to pop out, right? And it's funny because my husband and I will sit there and watch it and he'll be like, oh my gosh, this is so stupid. But again, there's always a way. So parents need to understand that it's there. You have to be the driver. You have to be on the offensive. And don't take no for an answer. Mm-hmm. Just keep pushing.
Yeah. I would say that even in like California, as an example, you talked about how you have several people, you know, who are just like, screw it. And they send their kids anyway. But even with that, again, because of SB 276 and 277 and doctors having their license stripped from them for giving out exemptions and all the tyranny in California, it's honestly, I look at that as, for the people who do choose to stay in California, it's a huge blessing because it's forcing you to exit the system early and adopt new ways. And you see so many homeschooling pods and homeschooling communities pop up in California, even to the point that if someone's a single mom of three kids and can't afford to send her, you know, kids to alternative schools and is sort of in a pickle because she doesn't want to vaccinate her kids, there's ways around that in California now where people are creating funds that will help these parents or make it so minimally priced that it's easy to send them to these schools. Yeah. I interviewed Connor Boyack recently, who's a huge homeschooling advocate. And he sort of says this. He's like, if you're having to choose between, he wasn't even talking about vaccines. He was just talking about sending your kids to public school, but the same applies. If you're having to choose between sending your kid to public school so that you can maintain your job or quitting your job so that your kids can go to an alternative school.
Quit your job.
What's more important?
Yeah. I mean, I do. I have these conversations daily with parents and they go, well, I can't leave New York. I can't leave California because of my job. I go, okay. So you're willing to inject your child with poison because of your job. What happens when your child dies?
Right.
And that sounds so like, whoa, I can't believe she just said that.
But it happens.
That happens all the time.
Right.
You will find another job. You can do many things. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Right.
So many parents will say, oh, I'd die for my child. I'd die for my child. But when push comes to shove, they actually won't sacrifice to keep their child safe. And they need to. And to your point about like California and the tyrannical state it is and SB 277 and all the things, I don't think many parents realize that if even 10%, we're talking 10% of kids who are in public and private school in California, if they refused to send their children, just 10%, that law would be overturned like that.
Right.
10%.
Yeah. And that's my thing too. When it comes to exemptions, it's like a piece of me is like, nah, I feel like we shouldn't even be playing that game because that's like, oh, I'm going to play by your rules. And I understand.
Yeah.
Like we've done it too. I even did it when I was in the army when they were still honoring them. I was like, okay, I don't see any other way around this. So I'm just going to get a religious exemption for this. Right. But at the end of the day, it's still kind of like playing their game by their rules. Whereas just like you're saying, if enough of us were just like, no, we're not doing that, what could they do? Yeah.
The schools won't get the money.
Like,
they're
exactly.
going to cave. Yeah, they're going to cave.
They there's nothing that they can do.
I have had many a night where I've sat back and gone, I don't understand why that happened in California. I mean, I was on the front lines fighting for that along with some other people. And I still am so confused.
Because it's still like pleading with and petitioning with the state, asking the state, hey, please give us our rights instead of that amount of, like, imagine that amount of people that turned up to those rallies and events were just like, no, Like, we're still just going to send our kids to school. What are you going to do about it?
But how did parents even fall for it?
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Anyways, that's a whole other topic. But
yeah,
it can crumble if parents want it to crumble. Yeah.
I think in large part, most of the tyrannical problems with government and, you know, any other agency, like, let's say you work in a law firm and they're saying that you must get the shot. If you just get enough people to authentically just stand up and be like, no, we're not going to do that, there's nothing that they could do. And I always say that with respect to what happened during the whole charade of 2020 is there were a lot of people who didn't want to say yes to those measures who did simply because they were a little bit too scared. Had they worked through that fear and just said, no, had enough people done that, there's nothing new that would have happened. They couldn't have done anything. There's nothing that they could have done if just enough of us understand and recognize our own power and are like, no, we're not playing that game anymore. But it's easy for one individual to sit here and say that, but that really is like the solution in a lot of ways, or the easiest solution. Now there are other solutions, obviously, but okay. So now I want to get into the healing side of things, because the story of redemption on the back end of being harmed and having so-called experts tell you that you're always going to be this way, there's nothing you can do, you need to just accept this diagnosis, is really such a beautiful story. And it's a story that I've heard from several other people, not even just on the sort of autism or any brain inflammation, neurological issue type of thing. I've heard it with cancer, I've heard it with multiple sclerosis, I've heard it with so many things where people are like, nope, I'm not accepting this diagnosis. I'm going to defy the odds, so to speak, and do what I can to heal naturally. And they do. So what are some of the steps that your family took once you were sort of dealt this card to recover the situation you were dealing with?
I will say it's not easy, but it is simple. And so I want parents to understand that first, because I think a lot of people initially, you look at the problem, and let's say the problem is a child is diagnosed with autism. It's a very big problem that you're faced with, meaning for a lot of these families, they're faced with, I've lost my child, right? Like, they're not talking anymore. They were talking. They are eye contact, sometimes they're doing the self-injury harm type of behavior. Like, you are faced with something very big that also carries a lot of emotional weight to it. So again, we kind of go back to, there's two paths. There's the path of, I know this is going to be hard, but I also inherently believe that my child was fine. And there was a trigger. There was a poison. There was something that happened that took my child from homeostasis and the beautiful way that their body was developing to this dark place, which means if I go back to that root cause and help the body get back into homeostasis, then there's healing that comes with that. But that is the harder path, I'll be honest. And that's why a lot of parents don't choose it. Because think about when you're faced with that, you have the easy path that you're dealt with. It's genetic. It's not your fault, Alec. Mm-hmm. We have a massive problem of victimhood in this society.
Right.
And they play right into that.
Totally.
So the easier path is, Jody, I was told there's nothing I can do. It's just our genetics.
Right. So, well, and there's something to be said, and I know you would agree with this, about labeling specific disease symptoms, like even the label autism, because that, amongst the sea of other disease symptoms that they continue to add more and more and more new diseases that are just supposedly distinct diseases, is that then gives them the ability to come up with specific treatments and therapeutics and drugs to treat that specific disease, when I would say overwhelmingly, these so-called specific disease states or diseases rather, are just that body's unique way of expressing the toxicity that 100%. It is dealing with.
Yes. And I will tell you that this path over here of I'm taking ownership and I'm going to heal my child no matter what it takes or what I face, you will get unfriended. You will get shamed every step of the way. You will lose family members. You will come up against the most hate that you've ever experienced in your life, which is so counterintuitive to what it should be. What it should be is, you can do this. I'm right behind you. We're cheering you on. How can we help you? What can we do? Teach me. Let me learn. Like, that's what it should be.
Do you think that is because other people subconsciously don't want to see you taking your own power back? Like, what is it?
I think it makes them very uncomfortable because then they have to accept that potentially they were harmed by the system, by a medication. Sense. Then if let's say I'm healing my child and my auntie is on 10 different medications for her diabetes and her cholesterol and her high blood pressure and all these things, right? Then she has to take a step back and go, well, maybe I could heal too.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to face that. It's too hard. Yeah. What is so interesting about this phenomenon is that if you go this path over here, which is the easy path, right? The path of acceptance, the path of victimhood. I have never in my life, and I have been in the autism, ADHD, childhood obesity, diabetes, like all the things, allergies, eczema. There's so many. I've been in that world observing and trying to do what I can for years. I have never seen such hateful, evil people than in that world.
Wow.
I have never seen more. I mean, you go to any Facebook group that's like an autism support group, and the minute that you even mention something like, oh, hey, like maybe they have some brain inflammation going on and like you could like change their diet. Without even mentioning vaccines, you are torn apart.
Jeez.
And you wonder why parents don't choose this path.
Yeah.
Because you're either shamed or ridiculed and you lose friends, or you go here and you're actually asking genuine questions and you're shamed and ridiculed.
Right.
There's no winning.
Right.
Right. And so it blows my mind. And I think that's also why a lot of parents that end up coming to me for help and support and a healing plan, they've been in that group, that Facebook group, and eventually they see the wretchedness of that group. And all it is it's victimhood, 110%.
I feel like it's literally the phenomenon of crabs in a bucket, where it's like someone is climbing up trying to ask a question like, huh, let me peek over this bucket to see if maybe there's another solution, because I don't really hear any solutions being talked about here. And then all those people pull you down for even just entertaining the possibility that there might be some brain inflammation that the body's dealing with in an attempt to heal, by the way, of which I would imagine in many cases you go to a doctor and they prescribe, if not psychotropic medications, something else that is just going to perpetuate or suppress those symptoms of healing. And the moment that you even entertain that, though, you're pulled back down by the rest of the group, by people who you're supposed to be seeking.
They're supposed to be your allies. Yeah, yeah. And I just want to tell parents, you have to be very careful. You have to be very mindful, because you will get sucked in to that echo chamber very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And those people don't want to heal. That's the bottom line, is those aren't my people. I would love for them to heal. I pray for that every day. I wake up every morning. I literally, truly want to save all the babies.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I want to save all the babies. But there's some parents who will not go that way. They just simply won't. And that's why we are all on our own path, right? Healing ultimately is very individual.
Right.
I can give you the regimen. I can say, Alec, do this for your son. He'll feel better. You have to want to do that.
Right. What I was going to say is, I think with many of these parents that are responding with such vitriol towards someone just asking questions in these Facebook groups, because I've come across some people who I went to high school with who have kids who have autism, And I've just shared some of, for example, Dr. Paul Thomas's studies comparing completely unvaccinated kids to vaccinated kids. And they didn't even study for, the study wasn't conducted to look at autism at all, but it did look at brain inflammation and neurological disorders. And of course, what it found was that in the unvaccinated group, they had far better health outcomes across the board versus the fully vaccinated group. And I'll link all these studies in the show notes. There's several of them. But just me posting that, the amount of hate I received from this one mom in particular who I'd went to high school with because her son has autism was insane. And I wanted to respond back, but I decided not to. And I'm like, I can't imagine, but see, this is the thing. So many other women who are on the sort of anti-vax side can imagine where they're at, but I can't imagine the amount of shame and guilt that that mom would have to go through to reconcile that. So she has to lash out and be like, nope, there's no way it was the vaccines, because they would then have to look at the reality of what they just allowed to happen and consented to on behalf of their kids.
Yes. That's why the first part of healing, because you ask about, okay, let's get into a healing regimen, which by the way, I want parents to know you can heal from these things. I have seen firsthand so many children lose an autism diagnosis. And you know what that neurologist does? Well, I guess they were misdiagnosed. No, they were not misdiagnosed.
It's crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
So number one is you have to believe that healing is possible. Number two is you have to heal yourself. Now that can happen congruently, right? Like that can happen side by side. So I can be working on myself and working through that shame and taking ownership and releasing and letting go. Because by the way, how many parents and mothers especially end up getting sick with a disease as a byproduct of their child being sick with a disease?
Right.
Because it's all that emotion.
Or vice versa too.
Or vice versa. And divorce rate, all of that stuff. Like it's there's so much emotion that's involved. So you have to heal that, but it can be done side by side. You know, so it's like, I'm going to recognize I didn't know everything. I made a mistake. I cannot beat myself up over that. I have to get into action. So that's where you transmute that shame and that guilt and that anger into a positive. And that's why with emotions, there's a positive and a negative polarity with every emotion. You can use a bad emotion for bad, and it will make you sick. And that is the number one cause of disease, by the way, is emotions, emotional trauma, repressed totally emotions. Or I can take that and I can transmute it into a positive, which is action, which is changing, making the necessary changes, not doing the same thing over and over, right? What's the definition of stupidity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different outcome.
Right.
So you've got to heal yourself. And so that comes with doing your own work. I understand that you're in the trenches, right? We are in the trenches as mothers, especially if you're trying to heal a child. It's exhausting. You don't have a whole lot of time for yourself. You're trying to learn everything at warp speed. So sometimes you do need a coach to come alongside you. Sometimes you do need somebody. In fact, I would say it's a wise choice to have somebody come alongside you and say, look, here's what you do. Let's work on the diet first. Sometimes you just need to be spoon-fed what to do because you're in such trauma mode that you can't think. And so that's number one, is you've got to have hope and belief. If you don't fully hope for the best outcome, if you don't fully believe that the body has the capability to heal, and that's a wide spectrum, by the way, because I will be very honest and admit that there are some very severe vaccine injuries, very severe. But that does not mean that that child can't find the capability to thrive in some way. Do we just throw them away and toss them out because their injury is more severe than this one over here?
Right.
I would want my child to thrive no matter what. I would 100%. Want them to be able to sleep well. I'd want their skin to look good. I'd want them to have joy and happiness, even if they could never speak their entire life. And then you're going to have a whole lot of kids, because I think autism is a sham in itself in terms of what they're calling it. I call it the modern day autism because it's not Rain Man. It's not autism.
Right.
Okay. It's a cover up.
Right.
And so when you have this whole batch of kids, millions of them, who are suffering with all these labels and diseases, yes, there's a lot of improvement that can be made. And for a lot of them, full restoration. So you have to believe in that, because you're going to come across so many obstacles that if you don't have inside of you this North Star, this like, I don't care who says what to me, I am healing my child, you're going to flounder.
Yeah.
You've got to be strong. And then the tangible pieces of healing come.
Yeah. And what are those tangible pieces of healing that, like, what are the steps that you guys took?
So for, I would say across the board, when you're looking at—
I love this because you're implying it's not one size fits all. Because that's the ironic thing is
not one size fits
all. That's what they say about their products. Like, this has to be tailored to the individual and what the way they're expressing. And there's probably going to be some trial and error and dare I say some experimentation that is required because every child is different with
this, there's a lot of patience.
Yeah.
There's a lot of experimentation. As a whole though, what I try to tell parents is it's actually very simple. So we're kind of in this weird space of natural health. I think social media has helped it a little bit, but it's also harmed it too. Meaning we're in a world of a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
So when you're confused, you're going to become paralyzed. And there's a lot of voices out there, and there's a lot of different protocols and a lot of different promises.
So much
and,
conflicting information too.
I mean,
like even in the like diet space, there are I just saw another video today that talked about how they like hooked up these electrodes to meat versus fruit. And in the fruit, there was producing its own electricity supposedly. And then the meat there, it wasn't. But then I've seen Carilion photography, which is supposed to show the electricity, the auric like field coming off of something, and meat has a lot of electricity coming off it. It's like shining bright in Carilion photography, and it's even shining brighter than the fruit. And it's like, but even that is just such a like small thing to look at. And it's just all this conflicting information in the holistic health space all the time.
At the end of the day, please, can we just go back to common sense and what makes sense? So that's what I tell parents. Let's go back to common sense. First of all, don't drink bleach. There's this whole like miracle mineral solution.
No way. Is this a thing? I thought you were joking.
No.
This is a thing.
This is a thing where they are telling parents to give their children bleach and it will heal them from autism.
What?
Please do not do that.
Like actual bleach?
Please do not do that.
Oh my God.
So is there healing? Yes. It's going to take time. Okay. So you're looking at, there was a damage done. Now, sometimes that damage has taken years.
Right.
Okay, so again, if you go way back to the birthing process, if you go back to being pregnant, there's things that happen there too. So you're not looking at, oh, one thing, one day my child just changed.
Right.
That will happen sometimes because the body eventually gives up.
Right.
So it's like the bucket overload. Okay, so but what started to fill that bucket? So you have to go all the way back to everything and realize that it's not going to be overnight. So if the mother got the Tdap, if they were drinking a bunch of aspartame, Crystal Light, Diet Coke, most people don't realize that that turns into formaldehyde in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Formaldehyde is in a vaccine. Formaldehyde is what they put in dead bodies to preserve them. Like anybody out there drinking aspartame, you're actually drinking formaldehyde, right?
Wow.
So just diet, what you're consuming, what supplements did you take? Were they actually quality? You know, then you go through the whole pregnancy process, right? Strep B, did you get antibiotics? Was it a C-section? Did you get fentanyl? Like all those things. Then the baby's not even born yet. Then it's the Hep B and the DTaP and the Hib and the eye gel and all these things, right? So I think we have to be really realistic to know that healing doesn't happen overnight, because there could have been 3 years of bioaccumulation between toxicities in the environment, toxicities in food, vaccines, and antibiotics, other medications, Tylenol. Like we know there is a clear, like I don't know how much more clear we can make it in a study that acetaminophen causes autism.
I think I think the mainstream's accepting that.
I think they are.
But
what you'll notice is they're keeping it very hush hush.
Yeah.
And they're keeping it very tailored on one message.
Well, it's also like how in some of the vaccine inserts, correct me if I'm wrong on this, they will admit in those that there is some data indicating that the adjuvants used in this shot can cause encephalitis, right? Like they'll admit that at the least it causes encephalitis, but they use specific language to avoid saying that it causes this other thing.
Well, they also say it's been studied and it's safe, right?
Yeah,
so they also say, oh, we've studied it. That amount of aluminum is totally safe when it's 10 to 20 times the level that it should be, right?
You bring up an important point, though, regarding the other things that lead to this accumulation of toxicity. And this relates to something that we were talking about last night, too, is that there is, you know, a much smaller population, but nonetheless a population of kids who are totally unvaccinated, mm-hmm. who still present with mm-hmm. these brain inflammation issues and neurological issues and stimming and things like this. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier, that it can be a slippery slope to blame all of these toxicity problems and chronic issues on vaccines and only look there in a very myopic way.
I agree.
Because there are so many other things that are causing this, like, you know, ultrasounds. Mm-hmm. Have those been adequately studied to see if prolonged exposure to those or repetitive exposure to those in utero cause any neurological issues or developmental issues?
Fluoride,
like, I mean, folic acid, just like you said, the antibiotics for someone who's, quote, strep B positive. There are so many other factors. And you mentioned emotional trauma too, like how many women who, when they're pregnant, if they look back, if their kid is presenting with issues, they're like, was I stressed at any point in my child's infant stages? Or was I stressed at any point during the time that my child was in utero? Yeah. And I think in a lot of the cases, if they look back, it's like, oh yes, I was extremely stressed. And I think that it's a compounding effect of all these things, like you're saying. And I think that oftentimes, like you said, vaccines just end up being the straw that broke the camel's back. But it is a major piece. I want to emphasize that. Of course it is, especially because the schedule is insane in the United States. Like we said, 26 by the time you're 12 months old is absolutely insane. But it's not the only thing. There are all these other things. And then especially as we're living in modernity, we're exposed to so many more non-native electromagnetic fields than we were in previous years. And I think that these disharmonious fields, prolonged repetitive exposure to them, when you're not balancing that out by getting enough time in natural electromagnetic fields out in nature, spending time with people away from technology, that is going to have cumulative effects as well. And I think it's a combination of all of these things.
We just live in a dirty fishbowl, basically.
Literally. Yeah. Like, speaking of terrain, it's like literally living in a dirty fishbowl. And then that's the ironic thing is they'll say, oh, so you vaccinate the fish in the dirty fishbowl instead of, oh, let's change environment.
Yeah. So, well, and I want to be very, very clear. My personal stance, there's not a single safe vaccine, period. There's not a single safe one.
You could have spoken for me there too.
Right.
You're saying your personal stance,
well,
but
both on the same page. However, I agree that, you know, a lot of questions I get, well, I didn't vaccinate my child. Why do they have this diagnosis? And then we start peeling back the layers and there is a culprit there.
Right. Right.
Now, I'll also say it's exponentially easier to heal a child who has not been vaccinated.
I would agree.
One who has.
That would make a lot of sense too, especially because, like, I would imagine, I have one more thing to say.
I
want to hear you talk about
the healing. I love it.
But I've thought about this quite a bit, and it goes back to the idea of ingesting aluminum versus injection. Like, our bodies were intelligently designed, and I do believe that we can heal from literally anything. And we've seen, and I've interviewed people with countless examples of healing from things that doctors told them they would never be able to heal from. Stage 3, stage 4 cancer, like crazy paralysis situations, MS, autism, things across the board. With that being said, the way our bodies were designed, I don't think we were ever intended to have a freaking needle with substances, with God knows what, shoved into our arm to be injected. I think we can detoxify from that, but it's going to take
it's harder.
But the issue is that our bodies are designed through our lymphatic system and through our digestive system, through our liver, to take things in ingesting them typically to detoxify, not something injected directly into our bloodstream.
Just like there's no medication that will ever heal, right? Like people need to understand at a very basic level that the body is designed perfectly. And the body is designed to always pull itself back into homeostasis.
Right.
All of these other outside factors that are man-made and synthetic have disrupted that. So we have to come back to, no, the body knows how to heal. Now I need to give it the right raw materials. Now I need to give it the right information. And going back to kind of like that healing process is, or sorry, the topic where like unvaccinated kids can end up with a diagnosis of something is we have to be careful too that as women, as mothers, we inherently always feel this pressure that we need to do things perfectly. Like that's kind of a motherly thing. And as much as there's often a root cause or there's often a, you know, kind of a trigger, what I don't want is I don't want mothers to feel like I have to be perfect. There is no such thing as being perfect. There is being aware. Okay, so if we are aware, and why I'm such an advocate of prevention of autism and prevention of these 54% of children who have some type of label, right? Biggest one now, by the way, is like a type 3 diabetes in kids.
Wow.
Insulin resistance. Big problem, which is also caused by vaccines.
Mm.
So I don't want mothers to feel this pressure that they have to be perfect, but it's being aware. So if you can lower that load by awareness, you're going to be exponentially further in the game in terms of preventing things. And like we mentioned, a lot of times if there's not vaccine damage involved, that homeostasis comes back a lot faster than if you're trying to pull heavy metals out of the body, right?
Yeah.
As far as a healing regimen, again, what I do in my work with clients is keep things very, very simple, right? So we always look at the whole history, what really is the trigger, okay? And we have to identify that. We do a lot of healing work, of course, with the mom too. Yeah. And then you have to go back to basics, right? So what is the body designed to do? The body is designed to detoxify itself on a daily basis. Like that is, your brain does it at night when you sleep. Your lymph nodes are a big part of your body's detoxification. Your whole metabolic system, right? Like all your body is designed to always be pulling itself back into balance through various functions. The number one thing I see with kids with autism is leaky gut. So we have to work on that. And that's often kind of that first step is how do we shore up the gut lining so that when they do start eating quality food, the body's actually absorbing those nutrients. Because most of the time, the case that they're or the place that they're in is leaky gut, where now all of a sudden the child is refusing food. It's very common. They become very picky. Well, they're not picky because all of a sudden they stop liking food. They're picky because they're mineral deficient, their body's not getting nutrients, and now that's affecting the brain. And so the brain perceives, and as the brain is giving a false message to the body, I don't like this food. Mm-hmm. I don't want this food. Okay, so it's like a loop that's happening. So usually we start right away with food modifications. And we start there a lot of times because that's one of the biggest hills to climb. Because that now is, okay, you're going to find your strength as a parent right here.
Because you got to say no.
You got to dig your heels in. Your child is not in control of you. You are in control of the situation. Mm. And of course, we can bring in support, right? It's like we work a lot on how do you find the right therapist? Not all therapists are created equal, just like not all doctors are created equal. You have to learn how to advocate for yourself. You have to know the law. You have to know all the ins and outs of that. And that's where people get trapped, is most of the time with an autism diagnosis, you get the diagnosis. They tell you, sorry, there's nothing we can do. We wish you well. Go do ABA. Applied behavioral analysis, which is another crock of
another state run program.
I would almost said a bad word.
It's okay. Cock of shit. I'll say it for you.
Thank you.
But it's another state run program,
yes.
Right? Okay.
ABA
is
garbage. Please do not do ABA. You need to turn your back on ABA right now. And I tick a lot of ABA therapists off with this. And then I show them, you're literally treating this child like they're a puppy.
Yeah.
This child's not a puppy. So stop training them like they're a puppy.
Right.
You train your child like they're a puppy, you're going to get rote responses back.
Right.
Okay. What is part of autism? Rote responses. They're literally training the child to have a rote response. Instead, you have to do floor time therapy. You have to really get in to their world, right? It's a very specially trained therapist mm-hmm. that does that. But most parents don't know how to advocate for that, that they're owed that, that they don't just have to take the ABA therapy because it's cheap and it's free, right? So there's a lot of retraining that happens like right up front. And then it's the peeling back the little layers. So we've got to change the food. We've got to get rid of toxins in the home, because if you're continuing to clean with bleach and have synthetic fragrances in the home and all these things, you're just fighting an uphill battle, right? So really it's like food, healing the gut, and therapy that are kind of like the three big pieces. And then you kind of start to go from there, right? Because as the body starts to heal, as the child starts to eat more nutrients, they start to feel better. And then,
before they start to feel better, in a lot of cases, correct me if I'm wrong, they can seem almost present as if they're worse in some cases, and that's called Herxheimer reactions, right?
A Herx reaction is very common. I don't know if we'll get into raw camel milk or not. But
okay, I do want to talk about raw camel milk, actually.
I am big, big on raw camel milk. But yes, so when, and it's not just with autism, it could be any disease that someone's trying to heal. It could be lupus, it could be MS, it could be cancer.
I'll share a case of mine, right? Yeah. So when I did my 15-day water fast, I was going into that with some mild skin issues, but sometime between like day 5 and 8, I had rashes on my armpits that went all the way down. And, you know, you're like sweating through your skin. That's one of your primary modes of detoxification. And I just looked at it as that, okay, this is my body getting the toxicity out. But if I didn't know any better, I'd be like, oh my God, my body's having some weird reaction to not having adequate nutrition. Yeah. That's not what it was. It was that my body was expressing and getting all this toxicity out. So I think that can happen both neurologically, present as sort of these mental things, those mental symptoms, neurological symptoms getting worse, but also physical symptoms getting worse at first, because that's the body sort of flooding the toxicity
out. That's honestly where a lot of parents will just tap out.
Yeah.
They tap out because, again,
understandably, because like if you didn't know, right?
That conditioning comes back really hard.
Yep.
Where the conditioning that we've had for so long is, if you have something wrong, if the body does something weird, go get a medication for it.
Right.
And I have to then retrain and go, no, that's a good sign. And really the simplest way to think about this is, if there's a toxicity in the body, there's clearly something causing these symptoms, how else is it going to get out?
Right.
And it's not going to be pretty.
Symptoms are healing.
It's not going to be pretty.
Right.
Yeah. So again, we go back to, it's an emotional process. It takes a lot of emotional strength. I can promise any parent, if they go through a healing process with their child, they will come out the strongest they've ever been. If they really own that process and move through it with just this hope and this determination and this positivity, which it's not always going to feel positive. You're going to have some really, really big lows. We've been through Herx reactions before. Like you said, it can show up as skin things. It can show up as worsening neurological symptoms where you look and you go, I mean, they're supposed to be better, Jody, but they're worse. Right. And I'm like, I know, just push through, right? Because we know what the body needs. At the end of the day, the body needs good food, good nourishing food. It doesn't need toxins, right? So we've got to just get those out and allow the healing to work and to happen. But it doesn't happen overnight. You know, it can take cells. Most people don't realize it can take your cells 9 months to a year to fully regenerate into a healthy cell.
Mm.
That's a long time.
Right.
So there's a lot of patience that's required. But Herx reactions are very real, and they usually happen when you're healing the gut.
Mm.
Okay, so when you have the leaky gut that's in most children that are battling these symptoms, is you just visually think of little pinhole pricks, right? So if I eat food, and most of the time these kids are in a situation where they're very limited with their diet already, they're eating McDonald's chicken nuggets, they're eating, you know, really their diet is 100% usually processed foods. At that point, their body has rejected fruits and meat and good things because they're nutrient deficient. Mm. Their brain doesn't know how that food tastes anymore. And so it becomes like a drug addict. Mm-hmm. You want the next hit. The body wants the next hit of
kind of like withdrawal symptoms, yes, too. Very maybe you could much throw that into symptoms. The category.
Yep. It's like a cocaine. I always paint the picture of it's like a cocaine addict. If you've ever seen somebody come off cocaine, I personally haven't, but I can envision it. It's like that. You've got to get it out of the body. And it's not going to be really fun or pretty. But at the end of the day, the other side of that is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Where all of a sudden they start trying new foods. Now, again, if you tapped out and you never got to that point of persistence, you're never going to see that other side. Mm-hmm. So you've got to keep pushing through. But it usually happens with the gut. So as you're healing that lining, which raw camel milk does, that's why I'm such a big fan of it, is it literally seals the gut lining that allows that gut to heal. But you will see Herc's reactions with it because it's getting rid of all of that poison and it's got to come out somehow. So it's going to come out through the skin. It's going to come out through the brain. It can come out through the poop, right? So you can go into constipation or diarrhea. Usually it's diarrhea. There's just, yeah. But it's actually
good
for
sign. For adults too who want to heal their gut issues?
Oh, yeah. Raw camel milk will heal diabetes.
Wow.
It's anti-cancer.
Wow.
It stabilizes blood sugar, but it has to be raw.
What is it about raw camel milk that does this?
It's a different protein structure.
Okay.
So you actually can't even put it.
How did you even find this? Like, this is such a like niche thing.
Seriously, random.
It's almost like up there with urine therapy, like raw camel milk.
Yeah,
urine.
I haven't quite done urine therapy, but but it was one
we
of
know someone who has.
I know
this.
Somebody who has. Yeah. It was one of those desperate mom moments where you're just searching and searching and searching. And I came across it and I thought, camels make milk, right? Of course they make milk. Like every animal makes milk, right? But I just never thought about it. And a lot of people like to say, well, it's the same as raw cow's milk or sheep or goat or donkey. Not the same. Very different animal. You have to look at their hooves. It's a totally different hoof. And it's a different protein structure. So a lot of people who are lactose intolerant or can't handle milk can drink raw camel milk. In fact, all of them can because it's a totally different protein structure.
Interesting.
So it's full of protein. It has natural immunoglobulins. Now, why that's important is when you're trying to heal the cell, when you're trying to basically clean out a cell, okay? So imagine autism. Yes, there's a toxicity in the body, but where does that toxicity rest? In our cells. Our cells carry everything. We're made up of cells. So that toxicity is in those cells and it's misinformation happening all day long. What you need in order to kind of clean out that cell is these proteins and these immunoglobulins. And it has like zinc, which is really important for palate. So a lot of kids who become very restrictive, they're deficient in zinc because they're not tasting their food anymore.
Interesting.
They're also deficient across the board in minerals, and minerals are the building block of every cell. So anyways, raw camel milk is 100% has to be part of an autism healing regimen.
Okay, yeah. Cool. You'd mentioned this before that it's important for the parent to do the work, to work through the shame and the guilt and just even just emotional trauma in general, right? In order to help facilitate the child healing. Mm-hmm. My question is, given that I look at our kids sort of as a mirror for our own shit, right? Like our own undealt with stuff. We even see it in our household. If my wife or I are stressed, if one of us is stressed, or if we're both stressed, if we're in an argument, our kids will express a very specific way. And it's like, this is a perfect mirror for us to be like, okay, I need to deal with my own stuff. And I think about how at a young age, obviously, our kids are quite literally reliant on us as parents. So I'd imagine on like a human biofield level that there's something there where we're literally tethered to them energetically in a way. So I know you'd said that it requires that the parent heals themselves emotionally to help facilitate this for their kids. But do you think at some level that in order for the kid to quite literally heal. The parent needs to heal themselves emotionally. Like literally that impacts their child just by you healing yourself emotionally. You get what I'm saying? It's more than absolutely. Just like being the gateway to begin healing. It's that, oh, if this isn't dealt with, your child is not going to heal, at least not at this age.
Well, and I'll say heal fully.
Fully. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And that's just generational trauma.
Right.
Right. So just think how generational trauma shows up in families all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll use obesity as an example. Nobody likes to talk about obesity because you can't be a victim then.
Right.
You have to take control and ownership.
Right.
But if an entire family, including all the way down to little toddlers, are obese, where did that start?
Yeah.
Right?
It's not genetic.
Oh. But of course, the majority of people believe that it is genetic because that's the easier way out. So really, what you're talking about is essentially generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of the healing process, can a child get better if a parent is willing to make the changes, even if they're not willing to face their own garbage? Sure, mm-hmm. You can see some improvement. What I'm talking about is energetic wholeness. That's a whole other level of healing. That's where you're going to actually break those negative cords for generations. And ultimately, I would hope that that's what we all want. It's not about the quest for being perfect, because we are, my personal view and opinion, we're all sinners. We all mess up. No one's perfect. Like, we live in a sin-fallen world. And that quest for perfection will paralyze somebody just as much as living a super toxic lifestyle.
Right.
But we should have the desire to want to break generational cycles. We should have the desire to want to live wholly and fully. And I do believe that if you look across the board at all of the garbage that happens in the world today, whether it's political, whether it's cultural, whether it's physical and all these diseases, if you just had a healthy population emotionally, you wouldn't see all that. If they were just healthy emotionally.
I totally agree with that. Because I think that if you are of sound mind and you're feeling your feelings, you're not suppressing them, you're willing to look at your own shadow, so to speak, that the body, I won't say in every case, because there is situations of acute poisoning and things like this, but my point is, overwhelmingly, your body can detoxify from anything much, much, much easier in that instance.
I mean, just look at people who heal from these traumatic brain injuries, where the other person doesn't. Same injury, same thing going on, but there was something inside of that person that was I want to heal. There was this desire, which I think is again, it's an emotional difference of give up. I want to heal, right? So yeah, I mean, there is this cord that we have with our kids, especially as moms. I talk about it a lot, you know, in my own teachings, which is this energetic cord. And that energetic cord will always be there, but we have the ability to change which frequency is going back and forth, right? So we have the ability to go, am I going to have negative frequency go to my child all the time? In which case, we know that there's plenty of examples where children come out of very abusive homes and they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
They change, they break the cycle.
Right.
It's absolutely possible, but it's exponentially harder.
Right.
Or am I going to pass along a positive cord, energetic cord to my child, right? So it really does begin and end with us.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's a be-all, end-all. And when it comes to physical healing, absolutely. If you're using really good tools, if you're eating nourishing food, your body's going to get healthier.
Mm-hmm.
But you know as well as I do, there are some really big health influencers who seem super perfect and do all the right things, and they're sick as all out.
Right.
Why?
Right.
Right?
I think it's the emotional piece that they're unwilling to look at 100%. So we're talking about all this healing, these diagnoses that doctors say that you'll live with forever. And again, autism is one that seems like it's a forever thing. Like so many people, even in the holistic health space, give up hope if their kid is diagnosed with autism. But you're talking about this healing from experience. Like everything we've talked about in this episode, you have literally done it. Like you've walked that path and helped recover from all these, these diagnoses that seem like it's like this is the final decision. This is how your kid's going to end up. And you've helped other people do this as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, firsthand experience. Like when you see it, you see it.
Right.
I mean, thousands that I have seen heal their children from autism, which that's one of the greatest lies out there is that you can't heal from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all comes back to that. It all comes back to what do you believe? Are you going to believe the lie that they're trying to sell you and just shut yourself in your home and go, well, there's nothing I can do?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you going to try to do something?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has a different outcome. Because the body is this magnificent, beautiful thing that we never know what it's going to do sometimes.
Right.
It's kind of cool.
And every situation is
mysterious in a way.
Right.
But also, we do know what the body needs in order for it to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, what I want parents to ask themselves is, what will happen when you look back 10, 15, 20 years from now? And you look back. And you go, I could have done something. I could have at least tried something. I could have at least changed our lifestyle so that our family was healthier. Now, maybe the child had a lot of damage and full restoration has not happened yet. But are they healthier?
Mm-hmm.
Are they happier? Is their body healthier? That's still possible.
Right.
And it's also possible to fully reverse a diagnosis. They don't want you to know that. They don't want you to know that you can do that because then you will never be their victim. They want you to be their victim. They want you to be dependent upon them. So you kind of have to go into it with open eyes, but don't get years down the road and look back and go, yeah, somebody told me about that, but I never did anything.
Mm.
It's the same thing as vaccination or well visits. Why do you keep going? If you've listened to this episode, maybe this is the first time somebody's actually heard about vaccines. Maybe it's the 10th time. And you sit there and you go, oh, I know, we don't need to do this. But you keep doing it. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Like, ultimately, you get to make that decision. Don't look back years from now and go, oh, I should have done something else.
Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful message. Yeah. Hopefully it inspires people into action. So, Jody, thank you so much for being here with me. This was awesome. Really appreciate you and your work. And for those that are watching or listening, check out all of Jody's stuff at the link in the show notes. And you offer like consultations and things like this for parents who are sort of struggling with some of the things that you talked
about. Yeah, I would say that's the majority of what I do is autism recovery or ADHD or different, all these labels and diagnoses. Yeah, even adults too, you know, cool. Hormones. I do a lot of hormone stuff and
amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much,
Jody. Thank you for having me.